I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. You'd be forgiven for thinking a jazz club with a 1940s flavor might not attract a younger crowd in Kansas City. As it turns out, you might be missing a business opportunity. Today, we'll meet the owner of such an establishment and ask why he thinks his set of throwback clubs are experiencing success with audiences of all ages. Then, for better or for worse, TV theme songs have a way of getting stuck in your head. We'll listen to favorites from the 50s to today and ask, what makes the best TV theme songs so memorable? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. John Scott has cracked the code. After years of hit-and-miss jazz clubs in Kansas City, Scott has blazed a path with a pair of successful venues, the Green Lady Lounge and the Black Dolphin at 18th and Grand downtown. Scott is offering jazz 7 days a week without a cover charge at the door. Now he's expanding his reach through a streaming radio service and his own record label. The secret may be the Green Lady's throwback atmosphere, which seems to date the club to the 1940s. John Scott joins me now, and welcome.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You grew up on a farm in Tonganoxie, John. When did jazz come into your life?
Looking back, I think jazz has always been a part of all of our lives in the sense that jazz is part of the American sound. It's in Christmas music.
Sure.
It's on TV. It's on the radio. It's always been there. So it's been in the background. My Aunt Carol Bisbee started taking me to jazz clubs, to Jardine's, the Majestic, to the Phoenix, pointedly encouraging me to enjoy the music that she'd been enjoying since the 60s.
And she was a huge influence in your decision to open the clubs to begin with.
Yeah, so later, after I was looking for my next career, she said, John, let's go look at that old Jardine space. Right?
Which was empty for a long time, just by the Country Club Plaza there. Yeah.
Right. It had been empty. So we scheduled an appointment and went and looked at that space. And I'd been in there, of course, with her in the past and then, on my own, sometimes. So yeah, that was really interesting.
Why wasn't that space the right space?
It was... Going in there, it had been completely, essentially gutted down to the wall, back to the walls. Looking at the new price point per square foot, and the available space, and the fact that it was going to take a new occupancy license and all the codes and everything to get it back up to snuff.
Yeah,
I did not see how that could be a viable business.
So, how did you end up at 18th and Grand?
I ended up at 1809 Grand because I went to look at 1813 Grand. And Bob Ahinger, I had leased from him before for my fitness centers. A fantastic human being, a great Kansas Cityan. And he had a space there for lease. And I said, I want it. And they said, it's already leased. And so I'm standing out in front of the building, and I look immediately to my left, and there was another club shuttered with a sign on it. So I began to look and see, you know, what the situation was there.
And that was the site for the Green Lady?
And that became, yeah, that became the Green Lady. So Lori Burrows still owns that building, and she had been running that club. It had recently closed and was, I found out, for sale. And so we began to look at that club as the new location.
So what were you thinking, though, John? You had been in fitness clubs, as you just mentioned. What in the world made you think that a jazz club could be successful in Kansas City after so many, time after time after time, had come and gone?
Well, being green is a benefit sometimes, you know. So not knowing that something is impossible is useful. It gives you the courage because you don't know it's not possible. So like with the fitness centers, I felt when I went into the fitness business, I felt that there was a place for me, that I could have a point of view that was unique and I thought might be successful in the industry. So when I began to look at the business of jazz and a venue, I thought maybe there was a place for me and I had a unique point of view that might that people might like.
And that point of view was what?
The point of view was to, one thing was to lead with the service and the environment rather than lead with jazz as being a civic obligation.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So
there meaning that the atmosphere, the atmospherics outside of the music maybe is just important or is pretty important next to the music itself.
It is a package. That's right.
Okay.
It's an absolute, it has, in my opinion, I thought where I could have a place in the market was to provide a complete atmosphere. And it was really based around the notion of the Kansas City brand mm-hmm. and that Kansas City jazz is integral to that authentic, historically based, but also very much alive brand.
So did you look at pictures of old clubs to come up with sort of the atmosphere that you've created there?
That's a good question. It's one of my rules is that never paint a wall a color that doesn't also come in duct tape. So you also kind of go with what is already there in the building so that you know, there's a synergy, there's a direction of design. So when I went into the building, there was a little bit of red on the wall. There was basically a stripe all the way around. It was a little darker red. There were a variety of other colors and so forth, but when I saw that red, I was like, okay, that's where I'm going to start. And I got it, made it a little bit more organic red, mm-hmm. a little richer red than was there. And then also not being incredibly well-funded and also not having an idea completely figured out, I often shop at antique malls. And I found a gold-framed, ornate gold-framed painting, a real painting. And once I had that painting and I had the color of the wall, it was from there that everything else was designed.
So you opened up the Green Lady when? When was the first night?
I took possession in October of 2012. I opened, I believe it was December 15th of 2012.
How long did it take before you began to even countenance the idea that maybe this thing is working?
Well, I thought it would work at the beginning, and then I thought it wouldn't work, you know, about 6 months to a year and a half after that. And then I absolutely knew it would work with some evidence about 2 years after I opened. Okay, so initially, very hopeful.
That's a long time. A lot of uncertainty in 2 years, John.
Yeah, that is a long time, and being unable to quit is also a motivator for continuing to figure out how to succeed.
Meaning for yourself personally, this thing had to work.
This had to work.
Mm-hmm.
It had to work. I had to figure out how to work. So when I was doing something wrong, I had to stop doing it very quickly. Mm-hmm. An excess and a tremendous amount of money will enable a person or an organization to continue to do things that are not ultimately successful. So I could not afford to fail. I needed to make mistakes quickly and change what I thought was true to what actually was true.
John Scott is my guest. He's the owner of the Green Lady Lounge, the Black Dolphin Chew Jazz Clubs at 18th and Grand in downtown Kansas City. What did you do wrong first? What are those mistakes you're referring to?
I underestimated the need for the capacity to sail. I didn't realize how much money it would take to support a jazz club.
Mm-hmm.
I did pretty quickly figure out that the notions of a cover charge and so forth were probably ultimately, they made sense. They were intuitively true. Like if you don't have enough money, just put a cover charge, right?
Right.
And there's your money. That is not true. Not for my kind of business.
Because why? Because again, cover charges and music seem to go hand in hand.
They go well for if you have a limited space and you have an excess of potential patrons, then put a cover charge on that door and you make money. You both lower your patrons to a number that you can accommodate, and two, you charge each patron an additional fee to enter your space. If jazz, though, is not the popular music of the day, then your problem is not that you have an excess of patrons. You know, rather, you need to evangelize that music.
Mm-hmm.
You need to spread the word and build your future patron base. You need to expose people to jazz so that they know they like it and they come back and back and back again. I wanted to, again, the whole package, I wanted to present a Kansas City experience. Jazz is an integral part of that, but I'm not relying on, and I don't believe that we should expect the musicians themselves to be the draw. Hmm. Rather, we need to prepare the space for them to be successful and be exposed to their future fans.
That's interesting. Hey, how much evangelizing are you still doing? Because clearly you started the record label, you got the streaming service, you're still geared in that direction.
With regard to the record label, I have glommed on to an already existing label, Ken Lovern's Jazz Daddy Records. I call Ken Lovern my jazz general.
Hmm.
He speaks both the language of the musicians and the language of business. And so as far as evangelizing jazz in Kansas City, I'll never stop doing that. That's our future market. And as a civic patriot, as a Kansas City lover, I love this town.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fan. Kansas City, even the word Kansas City, what a great
yes,
word.
Absolutely.
Right?
Couldn't agree more.
Kansas City jazz. So, the potential to market Kansas City and Kansas City jazz to the entire world is very exciting. It's very real. It's a legitimate product. And we're just beginning to market that.
So did word spread? Was it word of mouth? Did you market? How did you get people to come check it out the first time?
I think word of mouth is your biggest and your best. It's your most authentic and effective,
of course,
means
sure.
of advertising. It requires that, well, one, having a grand opening assumes that you have the concept so thoroughly fleshed out, you know you're going to be successful, that you expose as many people as possible to your initial offering. I didn't have a grand opening. I carefully rolled out, knowing I didn't know yet. I didn't even know what I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I rolled out really slowly. And so I was able to make my mistakes with regard to customer service, etc., to few people,
mm-hmm.
fix those mistakes, and then slowly grow over time till I had more and more patrons, figured it out. And then that good word of mouth, just grows and grows.
You know, you have some interesting standards at your clubs. The musicians have to wear a jacket and tie. Their breaks are limited. Why?
Because I came into the scene relatively green. I came into it not as a musician. I came into it as a patron. And so when I went to the other venues and I watched the musicians, I watched as a critical patron wanting to love the Kansas City music, but then also identifying as a consumer the things I would like to experience better, like to see done, in my opinion, from my perspective, better.
You're not crazy about certain kinds of jazz. In fact, I've heard you say that there's certain creative jazz that sort of puts you off. What about that?
I think that's probably less true than maybe has been made of.
Experimental jazz may be the word.
I cannot think of a kind of jazz that the Kansas City musicians are making that I don't absolutely love, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I really cannot. What I think is important, though, is that the presentation, regardless of whether you want to call it experimental or anything else, that the presentation always be extraordinarily respectful, that is, of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best chance for the musician to be heard by more than just a select few. So it's not so much about the music itself, but rather the presentation.
So you have these two clubs. You have the Green Lady and you have the Black Dolphin. They're literally side by side. What's the difference between them?
I didn't engineer on purpose a difference. I will say that one difference just organically is that I haven't had time yet to create the decor for the Black Dolphin that ultimately it will have.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Green Lady is essentially an evangelical jazz club in the sense it's not, I don't mean religious there. I mean that it evangelizes jazz to people who don't already know they like jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Black Dolphin creates an opportunity for people who have either always known they love jazz or have recently learned that they love jazz, and they have an opportunity then to listen better with a group of like-minded jazz fans to a band in relative quiet. So it's more of a listening room over there. Still mm-hmm. no cover charge,
mm-hmm.
but it creates an opportunity for more of a listening environment.
And now you're thinking about opening a third club right in the same block. What are you thinking about?
So the third location, right next to the Black Dolphin, there is a market for, there's a need for as well, entertainment for families of all ages. So from the very young to the older folks, jazz is a multi-generation, all, you know, ethnicity kind of music. It's an American music. I get a lot of calls with, I love Green Lady, saying, I love Green Lady. I'd love to bring in my 12-year-old so they can experience, and I want them to come in as well. This is a all-ages family jazz venue where an entire family or a couple of high schoolers can go on a date. They can experience the professional atmosphere of a Kansas City jazz club, and it's a no-alcohol concept.
Mm-hmm. So you're even evangelizing another generation here, then, in a sense.
Absolutely.
If you can get them in the door the first time, the hope is that maybe you can continue the momentum going forward.
Exactly. I am creating, well, we are, it's not me. The whole scene, though, is creating a future fan base integral to 100-year, you know, Kansas City jazz business model.
Yeah. Well, why isn't the 18th and Vine District, John, why isn't that enough? Why do you have to exist? Why isn't 18th and Vine the jazz district for Kansas City, and we're going to leave it at that?
I am very optimistic for the 18th and Vine area. And I'm at 18th and Grand. 18th and Vine is a mere few blocks away.
Right down the street, in a sense.
Right?
Yeah.
The Blue Room, an internationally known Kansas City jazz club, the gym, the museum. These are powerful draws for Kansas City. And they are going to benefit from the robust, vivacious, existing and growing Kansas City jazz scene.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
It does that as well, and don't keep yourself anchored to the floor when the sea is rising or you'll be flooded.
Yeah.
So rise up with it. And I am absolutely encouraged. I'm very proud of our city for what they're doing, especially very recently. And I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of good organic development down there. If you're looking for the future, that's the future. 18th and Vine.
John Scott's the owner of the Green Lady Lounge, the next door Black Dolphin, and a coming jazz club for folks under the age of 18 and 21. And John, good luck. So nice of you to come in and visit with us. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll revisit your favorite TV theme songs. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. On Friday, former White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest, who worked under President Barack Obama, was here. You can find that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, we'll find out why a former Sprint CEO is ranking corporations based on just how they are. We'll also sit down with some KC jazz geniuses who are getting set to play with a symphony orchestra backing band. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Is the golden era of the TV theme song history? Some experts thought so a few years ago, but that thinking may be changing. I know I've got a favorite, and you just listened to it from The Andy Griffith Show. With us now to talk about the TV theme song, Brian McCavish is the purveyor of the Weekend To-Do List, heard on the show each Thursday, and a former feature and entertainment writer for The Star. Brian, nice to have you. Welcome.
It is great to be here.
Paul Rudy is the UMKC Curator's Distinguished Professor of Music Composition and a Guggenheim winner. And Paul, so nice to have you too.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
We're interested in our listeners' picks for their favorite TV theme songs. Give us a shout, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, Brian, is the golden era of the TV theme song history?
Not
you
today.
Hear that song, you think maybe it is.
Not today on Up to Date. It's not. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess we'll just jump right in here. Oh, but before I answer your question, let me ask you a question
no,
of you.
I'm asking the questions.
Oh, okay.
Here.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. But here's my question.
Yes.
Anyway, favorite TV theme, Andy Griffith?
Yeah, of course.
Why?
Because it's so catchy.
Because it sets, exactly, that's one of the things you have to have. But it sets the perfect small town, bucolic, take your time mood before Andy or Barney or little Ronnie Howard opens their mouth, okay? That's why you like it. The theme makes a big difference. Now, back to your question.
Yes.
Which was?
Is the golden era of the TV theme song over?
It might be sort of over because we binge watch now, right? In the old days, you'd sit there, right? The old days, years ago.
Wait for it to start.
It was a reminder, oh, my show's coming on. And it just totally set up the experience you were about to have. It would familiarize you or refamiliarize you with the characters, their situations. And we'll be getting into some of that, some of the greatest examples of that over the years. But, well, there's the Big Bang Theory. There's that wonderful song that's part of primetime television. That's an old style story song, in a sense.
Well, Paul, can we agree that the Andy Griffith Show theme song was the greatest of all time because I liked it the most?
It's a pretty good one. I mean, you know, the whole whistling thing, it's just sheer genius to set up this sort of laid-back, small-town, unurban sort of chill scene, you know.
And Earl Hagen, the guy who came up with it, just sort of did it on a whim, just sort of started whistling, and it worked, and
yeah,
that's how you make history, I guess.
Absolutely,
know?
Yeah. If you think about these things too much, you know, it's for those of us who look at them later and try to figure out why they're so successful. We're the ones that think about them a lot. But I think a lot of times it's just what comes out quickly, what comes out that sets up the feeling of the show, that, and those things kind of come naturally sometimes.
Well, let's listen to another theme that I think a lot of folks are going to recognize pretty quickly here. That's a short one, but also pretty effective.
A sweet one.
From?
I Love Lucy.
What else? Yeah.
That's right. The 1950s, probably, well, not just the most famous theme of the 50s, but maybe the most famous theme of all time.
Right. Was it really?
Well, this is a matter of opinion. I mean, I have my own thoughts, and I'm going to hold off on letting you know what my favorite is unless you force it out of me now.
Well,
don't do it.
Sooner or later, I will.
Yes, you will.
Yeah.
No, I
like
that theme. And, Paul, I'm interested to hear what you have to think about this orchestrally speaking. But, okay, the 50s were a conformity kind of a thing, right? People trying to, you know, not rock the boat. And so early television, pioneering medium, they wanted to not do anything too crazy different, right? So they embodied a slick conventional showbiz feel to a lot of these TV show themes, right? The new medium was building on the formal sounding musical themes and soundtracks of Hollywood films, a territory Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, for that matter, knew quite well.
Right.
And so the TV show themes wanted to reflect that and to be taken seriously. So conformity, I believe, in a lot of these 50s themes orchestrally, you know, conformity was the primary calling card. Don't stray too far, if at all, from perceived norms.
Paul Rudy, you're our musical composition expert here. What do you make of the I Love Lucy theme?
Yeah, well, there's some interesting things going on musically. You know, first of all, it's I Love Lucy. Who loves Lucy? Well, it's Ricky that loves Lucy, right? So one of the very first things you hear is this harp sweep, which doesn't actually go with the big band sound, right? We don't usually have the harp there, but it's happening. It's happening on the offbeats, right? So there's this syncopated thing at the beginning. In the middle, it goes really strongly on the beat. So that's kind of the Ricky sort of Latin jazz thing.
Right.
And then at the end, it goes back to the syncopation and the harp sweeps go up again. So you've got this really interesting interplay rhythmically happening between what is sort of Ricky's voice musically and what's Lucy's voice. And the syncopated part is kind of maybe underscoring her character of... she's a little flamboyant. She doesn't want to stay within the lines. Like her whole thing is about pushing the boundaries.
Right.
And so that syncopation rhythmically really sets that up.
Well, was that theme song then, would you guess, was it written with all that in mind? Because once you say all that, I'm thinking, man, writing one of these things is a whole lot more complicated than I would have thought it was.
Yeah, see, I think those of us that look at it later and really strip it down, and we'll get into a lot of stuff in Gilligan's Island, the next one. Oh, sorry. I just ruined it.
That's okay.
I'm not sure that the people writing these things think these, and if I think about a composition this much before I write it, it's going to be my worst composition. These are things that come out if we're tapped into the message of the show, if we're tapped into the ethos, if we're tapped into the ideology, the characters, the emotion of the show. These things are going to come out kind of naturally, and that's part of the talent of writing these memes, these musical memes.
Well, let's go to our next one, which Paul has already introduced for us. Let's take a listen.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure. 5 passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour. Weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost.
You know, Paul, I've only heard that theme song 49,000 times. But it still sounds good to hear it again. You already were alluding to the fact there's a lot going on here in this one, too.
Yeah, so I could actually probably teach a whole class on this.
Really?
It's just saturated in terms of how it says the whole story just in this simple song.
Which goes back to Brian's point. You can just, if you're not familiar with the show, you can listen to the theme song pretty quickly and get a sense what the show's all
about.
Yeah,
totally. So, like, the tonal structure, it starts in a minor key, and it undulates between a minor key and a major chord down a step. So this undulation is like the undulation of the sea that they're going out on this journey. Repetition of verse, there's 4 repetitions. There's no B theme, right? If you have a B theme, you go away from the A theme and you come home to the...
What's a B theme? A secondary?
A secondary theme.
Yeah.
So if you go away from the first theme, then you come back to the first theme after going away from it, that's antithetical to the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
This notion that there's a place you go and you come back. So the tonal structure of this little gem says these guys are marooned on an island and they're not getting off. There's some really subtle things going on in terms of describing each character musically. And the last section. It's kind of a variation on the theme where they musically describe each character. Gilligan is a little goofy flute, piccolo trill. The captain is more like a Sousa piccolo riff, right?
Yes.
A military thing. The skipper is a big, bold, the millionaire is a big, bold brass theme. And his wife is this slippery sort of woodwind thing that sort of droops down. So there's a lot of subtle things. There's also, you can pay attention to when the melody is in unison. Like there's one person singing the melody, and then when they're talking about the ship or the minnow or getting lost at sea, it's harmonized. So that's the skipper and Gilligan, right? So they're characterizing the sort of, the pair of those two who are
Central to the show,
yeah.
You know, Brian, it's hard to overestimate the impact that Ginger and Marianne had on a whole generation of people growing up.
It's
young men, particularly.
I won't even try.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Ginger or Marianne, by the way.
Don't go there. Yeah.
I just went there.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Paul, okay, when they mentioned the movie star, what's going on there?
Let's see, the movie star.
I know what's going on. It's the movie star.
A sultry thing goes
on. It's like a flute clarinet trill.
Oh.
So it's almost like the musical equivalent to a veil or you know, some kind of silk fabric.
I love the way they sing that. Okay, so if the 50s were about conformity in these themes, the 60s, from a pop culture point of view, introduced in these TV themes fantasy, even forms of subversion from the norms.
Wow.
You still have a largely traditional establishment audience at home, right? Early, mid-60s. So show us things that we can't do, we'd never do. Oh, no. Show us people on an island, right? All by themselves, like Gilligan's Island. Or how about the Beverly Hillbillies? People that, like, you know, poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. He shoots at some food and up comes some bubbling crude. He becomes a millionaire.
Right.
How about the Patty Duke Show? Identical twin cousins? That theme absolutely played that out. The Addams Family, the Flintstones, the Monkees, the Brady Bunch, they all told wonderfully concise stories.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Larry from Kansas City, Missouri. We're talking about great TV theme songs, Larry.
Yes, I'm enjoying it.
Good, thanks.
And I have to go to The Greatest American Hero. For one reason, it was the theme song was better than the show. Second reason is that it made it onto Seinfeld. So that's my vote.
Okay, I appreciate it. Carol wrote us and said, tweeted us and said Beverly Hillbillies were her favorite. Travis tweeted, my 9-year-old daughter loves hearing the Park and Rec theme, perks up every time it comes on. Then again, so do I, he writes. How about two themes from the 70s reflecting two social issues? Let's start with this one.
And every little movement you show, love is all I know.
Brian, that was a good one.
Okay.
Like that song. Who sings that?
Is that
B.J. Thomas?
That is Sonny Curtis.
Okay.
It was written in 2 hours, he says.
Wow.
Sonny played with Buddy Holly, and he also wrote I Fought the Law for the Bobby Fuller Four back in the 60s.
Mm.
And this is an example of a song. I mean, it's not just a great, maybe the greatest sitcom theme ever for the Mary Tyler Moore Show. It fits because it not only fits the show, but it speaks to the emerging population of career women trying to, quote, make it after all.
Because you see Mary Tyler Moore as a song is playing, walking and throwing her cap in the air. It's that famous...
At the very end, she throws that... Now, at the very first season, the first line to this song that Sonny offered was, how will you make it on your own? This world is awfully big. Girl, this time you're all alone. By the second season, she'd already made it. So then it became, who can turn the world on with her smile? Who can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile?
Paul, what do you think of that theme?
Yeah, it's a great theme, too. There's, again, rhythm is a really important thing in a lot of these themes because at the beginning we have these this big, bold, brassy statement, which says right from the beginning that she's going to make it, right? That,
mm-hmm.
that that's what this is about. It's about watching her do this. There's a lot of text painting that goes on, little trills in the woodwinds, or her smile is lit up with again, a trill. Those kind of text painting things are really, really big in this one. The final strain to me is the highest melodically, and it just reaches this stride. Mm-hmm. Like she's, you know, we see her throwing things in her cart. We see her doing everything on her own. And in the end, it's like she's just walking through this easily. And to me, the music says that. And what's interesting to me about this one is the final cadence. We almost kind of heard it in the background. The way it ends with this big, bold statement, but it doesn't just stop there. This really subtle orchestration
yes.
trickles out
yes.
at the end. And it's
yes.
actually compositionally really beautiful and says this is a show about a serious theme, but it's also about the subtleties of this theme. And to me, the song just sums up that.
We have another theme from a different show here from the 70s, again, reflecting on social issues. Let's check this one out.
Well, we're moving on.
Brian, which show is this one?
We finally got a piece of the pie. That's The Jeffersons,
yeah.
which was actually
That's
a spinoff of All in the Family. Now, this is an example of, like, starting in the 70s, these TV theme songs began sounding less like super specific jingles, Steve, with a product to sell, like the TV show, right? And they sounded more like a popular tune that you might hear on the radio. Their lyrics became less about a given show's singular characters and a lot more about sharing a relatable experience with those watching at home. So in the case of Mary Tyler Moore, it's about that career woman emerging. In the case of the Jeffersons, well, it's obviously addressing a quest for civil rights and financial equality for African Americans. Mm-hmm. They're finally making some progress here.
This is a pretty fun theme, Paul.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, there's the genre reference of the gospel choir in the. So this one has the rounded structure, the ABA. So you got a second theme in the middle that's unaccompanied, except I think for drums. Where you get harmony again says there's a community effort here, but there's also a certain amount of singular effort. And then the theme comes back at the end when they mm-hmm. finally reach their piece of the pie. They're getting what's rightfully theirs. They're breaking these barriers. They're coming home to this place that they've earned
right.
and their rightful place.
Oh, this is really fun. We're talking about favorite TV theme songs. 816-235-2888 is the phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's keep rolling down the road here, and let's go to one of the few television themes to also be a popular hit.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same.
Again, that's such an iconic song, Paul, and it fits the show so well.
Yeah, this opening piano gesture to me, da 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 da, da is
yes.
like throwing your leg over the stool. It's like plopping down
oh,
after a long day of work.
Right, right, right.
And then making your way through the world is solo voice with piano only. It's kind of not going anywhere tonally. The pitches aren't moving anywhere. And then when you start talking, when they start talking about wouldn't you like to get away, the melody rises, the whole band comes in, the solo vocal is harmonized. So it's like your real family is at this bar, is at
not
Cheers.
At the house. It's not a bar.
It's not where you work. It's
yeah.
not at home where you're plodding through. It's just where you go.
Which
to,
is what that show was about. That's what
yeah.
that show exactly was yeah. sort of referencing, Brian.
Okay, so this is the 1980s. The show actually ran from 82 to 93. But I like to look at it, you know, from the sky, from space. Let's look down at this. So. Okay, we all went a little crazy in the mm-hmm. 1970s, right? So let's have a drink Yeah. Let's be pals. Let's take comfort in the comrades that are just an elbow away,
right.
Just a tilted elbow away. This was actually done by Gary Portnoy. I don't think he ever gave us anything else. Cheers. I mean, are you familiar, Paul, with anything else?
That's a musicology question.
But I got to tell you,
a composer.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, this song, I mean, it just puts a smile on your face. And that's how you know if you have a great TV show theme. If it makes you smile and you can't stop smiling for the duration of the theme, you have a home run.
Yeah, okay. Again, favorite TV theme songs is our topic, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's keep rolling here. The 90s saw a television show with a hit song as well. That was the Rembrandts. What do you make of that one, Paul?
Yeah, well, this one obviously has an upbeat tempo.
From Friends,
tempo,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
say.
From yeah. Friends, yeah. And I grew up watching this show. It's got a really fast upbeat tempo. It's really syncopated, so the melody is happening not on the beat but off the beat, which means these are young people. They're trying to find their way in the world. They're not quite settled in
Why
yet.
Does the offbeat nature suggest that?
It's just less stable than when the beat is really
okay.
Really on the beat, on the ground. It's like jazz has the emphasis is off the beat, on syncopation, which gives it a buoyancy, a forward motion that something that's really grounded on the beat doesn't have. You got this weird little clapping thing at the end. It's
yes.
Like, come on, snap to it. Let's get busy here. We're in our 20s now. It's time to make careers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when, again, in this one, when they choose to harmonize the melody and when they don't, to me, supports this notion that we're not in this alone. We're in it with a bunch of friends. We're
That's
supporting
great.
Each other. And so, yeah, there's a lot of little gems in
Brian.
This one, too.
And, of course, that was performed by the Rembrandts back in the 90s. And this is an example of actually a surprisingly large number of TV show themes that became hits on the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, remember in the 70s, Welcome Back, Cotter? That was John Sebastian, formerly of the Love and Spoonful. That was a big hit on the radio. There was the Hawaii Five-O theme by the guitar-slinging Ventures.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Bonanza?
Yeah.
Dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun.
Yes.
That was a hit on the radio. And I also agree with the caller or the texter, whomever, The Greatest American Hero by Joey Scarberry, about this goofy but good-hearted superhero. That was a big hit on the radio. Beautiful stuff.
Speaking of Welcome Back, Cotter, October from Lawrence. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, no, Welcome Back, Cotter, the John Sebastian song, is definitely my favorite television theme song of all time.
Because?
It evokes a sense of nostalgia. I think it, in retrospect, embodies the 70s, and I want to be a social studies teacher because of that show.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, great call. I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Dennis from Waldo. Dennis, you're on Up to Date.
What can I say? The best ever theme song? Theme for a TV show was Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
And I remember,
yeah,
I can immediately bring that to mind, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's four, maybe five really bizarre jazz chords, and they just repeat it over and over and over again, and the melody changes, you know, but the melody sticks to those very weird chords.
But great tension in that theme song, right? Courtroom,
yeah,
drama, that kind of thing, yeah.
I think it's Perry's personality.
Yeah. Dennis, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Mike from Overland Park, you're on Up to Date, Mike.
Can I sing my favorite theme song?
Go.
Have gun, will travel, read the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire, he's the calling wind. A soldier of fortune is a man called Paladin.
I think people over Kansas City are screaming and clapping right now, Mike. Have gun, will travel,
awesome,
right, Brian?
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, was it Paladin you're singing or Have Gun, Will Travel?
Well, the title of the show is Have Gun, Will Travel, but the shorthand is Paladin.
I see. And who was it Richard Boone who starred in that fine show years and
That's
years
exactly
ago?
Right.
I loved Richard Boone. Yeah.
That's a good one, Mike. Thanks for calling and thanks for singing for us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Brian from Kansas City, Missouri. Brian, nice to have you.
Yeah, it's the first time I ever called anybody.
Well, thank you for making this your first.
It was just mentioned, but I think the Hawaii Five-0 theme song is better than the show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Book them, Dano.
Yes. They kept for the new version of the show.
That's a good one, too. I'm glad you mentioned that one. Thank you. Let's move on to another one, even of more recent vintage here.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk a straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury.
We're talking theme songs from The Wire. They use a different theme for each of the first five seasons. What do you make of these, Paul?
Well, I think it's Tom Waits, right?
So yes, it's Tom Waits,
it's
right.
Just grit, you know.
Yes,
it's
right.
Grit. There's not going to be any sort of fluff here. It's going to be a story told in all of its
because gritty
messiness.
Big city journalism, all those things are playing into effect here. Brian,
I totally agree. You know, another TV theme song that chillingly captured its show's crime-infested subject matter was Woke Up This Morning from The Sopranos, right? That was originally done by the English band Alabama 3, but, you know, got yourself a gun. Oh, Tony's got a gun. He's got one.
Let's go to Joseph from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Go quickly, Joseph. I'm running short of time here.
All righty. Probably Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, yeah. Good choice. That's
great
right.
Choice.
Yeah.
Okay, we are out of time. I want to thank Brian McTavish, again, our weekend to-do list purveyor who's here talking about great TV theme songs. Paul Rudy is a UMKC curator's distinguished professor of music composition. Thanks for a very lively conversation.
What are we
going
to hear now?
Appreciate it. I don't know.
Game of Thrones, I dare say.
Are we? Let's go. Let's listen.
Ooh.
Okay. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. And tomorrow, how companies that treat workers and customers fairly and equally can make a profit, and how jazz artists and a symphony can make music together. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.